Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ooh, I'm so close to making Daisy! It's time for Must Have Seen TV, the podcast dedicated to the sitcoms of the 20th century. From I Love Lucy to News Radio. And I'm your TV guy, Brett White, and I'm also a reporter, producer for Decider.com. And welcome to part 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Is this 7? I should keep the number of the quarantine era of the podcast, which means you're hearing no music, you're hearing no audio clips, you're hearing nothing but pure, unfiltered, unleaded conversation, because I'm prioritizing getting as many episodes to you as fast as possible to, like, there isn't enough content out there in the world, but I don't know, whatever. Anyway, this week, I am joined by Winston Noel.
Hello.
Hi, and Catherine Mon.
Hi, Brett.
Hi, returning superstar guests. last time we talked about the Golden Girls, so I feel like
we. No, I thought we did.
We talked. It was the Golden Girls.
It was the Golden Girls.
Yeah. We did Frasier.
I did like, a Frasier episode with you. That's right.
Yeah, like first 10 episodes of the pod.
Right. So right, yeah, right. But then we also did Golden Girls.
Yeah. So y'all are quarantined in Brooklyn?
Yeah, we're cool. In Brooklyn.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah, we're in that COVID hotspot right with
you. Oh, yeah, I was in a COVID hotspot in Elmhurst area. That was, the Jamaica area was like popping. So,
are ambulances triggering for you now?
No, and that's the thing hear anything. Like, I will hear an ambulance every now and then, but people are talking about that New York experience, and I'm like, I have no idea what's going on.
Well, look, we are those people because we live like 3 blocks away from the hospital.
I'm sorry, you're going to hear me opening White Claw, not a sponsored podcast.
I wish I had some White Claw.
I'm drinking a little heavily. No, we live a couple of blocks from a hospital that actually is not one of the hardest hit, but we hear ambulances because they go streaking down avenue half a block away.
Yeah.
And I started to hear it in the white noise machine.
Oh my God.
That was kind of funny.
Yeah, but it's not as bad as it used to be, but it's still not great. So we were very happy to be able to watch some TV and not talk, because we were just saying I look at some of the I'm so bored content and I'm like, what's that like?
You know, they say that in New York you have time or you have money, but you can't have both. And I feel like COVID has dialed that up to 11.
Yeah.
I feel like I have, I definitely have more money than usual because I can't fucking buy anything.
Right.
Because I cannot shop online because Amazon is rightly prioritizing essential goods. So I wanted to order a record on Amazon. It was like, it'll get here in 2 weeks. And I'm like, that's fine.
By that time I won't want it.
No. Well, but also, the post office, which we definitely need to fucking save, is also shitting the bed. And so I'm currently missing around 4 to 5 packages that are about 3 weeks late. Oh, no. And so therefore, I'm afraid to just buy anything online, period, because I don't know if I'll get it.
It's truly crazy.
And so it is all weird problems. And I feel bad that my problems are not like the worst problems.
Sure.
Because I feel like I have no right to complain. But I'm also like, what it is doing to my mental health is still real. And
yes,
your problems are your problems. Yeah. I used to apologize to a therapist, which is a whole other thing to therapy. But one thing that we had to work on was the fact that there are people who are starving in Africa does not mean that you can't be stressed out because your boss is an asshole.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all like, as long as you are cognizant that there are other people that are worse off than you, and you're not acting like the fact that I'm not getting my novelty Empire Strikes Back records from the 80s.
Wow, that sounds like, fantastic.
Brett, another thing a therapist told me that might resonate with you. By the way, this is now a therapy podcast.
Yes, please.
He once said to me that I was crippled by self-awareness.
Oh, yeah.
And I really, that one stopped me in my tracks. And he came with me. And it was tied into this larger conversation about how I didn't have to apologize in therapy. But anyways, point being, I'm sorry you can't order your stuff. That's
That
just means
it feels weirdly patriotic right now to spend money too.
I know, like I was
alone will save the resources.
I know, but I was like in the early part of March, I was basically asking all my friends who don't live in New York, what are your local record stores? Do they have online stores? And I was buying a lot of vintage records from you know, North Carolina and Chicago, like St. Louis.
Yeah.
That was fun, but now no more. So, but anyway, this week we'll be traveling to February 20th, 1989, The Burbs ruled the box office. Straight Up by Paula Abdul topped the charts. And CBS aired the Designing Women episode, The Junies. Winston and Catherine, you must have seen The Junies before today.
That's a big negative. I was actually excited to see Designing Women at all. I had not seen any of it. And I am from Atlanta, so I feel like this was a kind of weird cultural gap that I should have filled.
Yeah.
I was a toddler. Not as we discussed, I think, during Golden Girls, was not really allowed to watch TV growing up. Also my first episode. I will also now admit to everyone that anytime I've heard a Designing Women reference, I thought that was some sort of like interior design 90s reality show, kind of like Queer Eye, but for women.
Oh, there was oh my God.
So now I know.
This is what I'm dealing with.
Yeah,
it's like these like huge gaps in pop culture.
Obviously, context clues before we watch the episode, I picked up on the fact that it was a sitcom.
Yes.
Wait, you just... This is, I mean, again, I don't discover this stuff until we start talking about
it. Brett also gave us the option to watch Taxi, and I confused it with Taxi Driver. Like, it's so weird that they turned that movie into a sitcom.
Which, I mean, they did a lot of those movies into sitcoms in the 80s. Like, there was a 9-to-5 TV show and things like that.
I was just like, it feels like a real tonal shift.
They're probably bringing Robert De Niro in for TV.
I love it.
So now I feel like I can be honest and tell people that I had kind of imagined Designing Women as like a Queer Eye, but straight. It's problematic. And it was some sort of like design spice up your life thing.
So no, we did not see it when it came out.
So we have like three levels.
I've seen an episode now.
We have no context whatsoever. You knew the base. Winston knew the basics, like sitcom in Atlanta. And I have now seen, only since it jumped to Hulu, I've seen the first, I think, two seasons.
Yeah.
So I haven't even watched all of it. Because I didn't grow up with it. Because it wasn't it was in reruns on Lifetime. So I had the option to watch it, but because my parents did not watch it, I just never really got around to it.
Same. And it felt like looking at just perusing the episodes, I was like, oh, this would have been too liberal for my household.
Yeah. This was a very liberal show.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would really like to watch more of it, having now skimmed the wiki.
Yeah.
Also, it was lightly problematic throughout, but
we'll get into it.
Felt progressive for the time, if that makes sense.
I have a lot of my notes turn into like a lot of what at the end of this episode. But this week on Must Have Seen TV, we're talking about the Designing Weapon X episode. Logan's right.
Now that's a show I'd watch too.
Designing Weapon X.
Yeah.
The Designing Women episode, The Junies. It is the 12th episode of season 3 and was written by Pam Norris and directed by David Trainer. Here's how Hulu describes the episode. Hoping to clean up with some extra cash and enticing prizes, Charlene becomes a Lady June sales lady and Suzanne sizzles when Anthony is up for an unusual honor from his junior college. Catherine Winston, how accurate is that description?
I mean, the first part's accurate. I don't know how... Sizzles, I feel like, is a too tough of a word.
But, so
yeah, I mean, yeah, sure. That's what happens. There's the Junies and the B-plot is the homecoming.
Here is what I am wondering. And again, my husband got me Designing Women on DVD a couple Christmases ago because I was like, well, I want to watch it, but it's not streaming anywhere.
Yeah.
The episodes on DVD are 25 minutes. 24 to 25. On Hulu, they're 22.
Yeah.
And so I'm wondering if there was a lot more of this Anthony Homecoming Queen plot that they just get that out.
That felt like way B plot. I think I was surprised.
It didn't even feel like a B plot. It felt like a C plot. And there just was no.
But I didn't feel like the A plot was like so meaty that it took over. Like, you know what I mean? I was just
critical essay.
No, I really liked it. But it was just such a, I just felt like it flew by. Like it was over so fast.
So the episode opens up with the opening credits, which again, also I think are not accurate. So like the season one opening credits have Meshach Taylor in them and he did not become a regular until season two, which lets me know that they just like retroactively. And that makes me annoyed, like how whatever opening credits aired with the show when it first aired is what should be attached to it for all time. You need that context.
Totally.
But this is the opening credits where they do the fun thing where like when a show gets a little bit older, they do the thing where they show like their original cast photo. Then it morphs into their like current cast photo. Yeah,
totally. I love that. It's like through the years and you're like, this is season three.
Well, it's like it's season three. And I'm like, well, maybe these opening credits are like the season six opening credits. I don't actually know.
Yeah, I know. That was weird. But I was like, I was like, oh, Georgia on my mind. Mm-hmm. I was like, whoa, this is way more Southern than I realized.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it was like, this is like, oh, this is like Tennessee Williams Southern.
Well, yeah, how accurate is this to y'all Southern experience?
Well, Catherine famously is a Yankee. Famously among my family is.
I didn't actually know that was a slur until after Winston.
It's not a slur,
but like it's a slur. It's a slur.
Southern people like we legit use Yankee.
Yeah,
I think that in the North they think it's a joke, but in the Southern, like if anyone cut off my dad and they had like New York plates or something, my dad would be like, "Oh, Yankee!" Like,
yeah,
it's a slur. And Winston and
Catherine is great
family
for a Yankee.
Has called me a Yankee, and I am a Northern elitist and proud of it. And I do look down on them for their racism, religion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Susceptibility to pyramid schemes.
I assume no one from Winston's family is watching.
Is listening. Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Two things. One, I was very anxious. Like design studios being run out of like old homes is totally a thing in Atlanta. Mm-hmm.
And like, so are mid-level marketing schemes, aka pyramid schemes, because the only people I know who've done them are Winston's cousins.
Yes.
Southerners.
It is a Southern gig.
It is a,
And I do feel some compassion because obviously you only choose to do that. It's like prostitution. You're only doing it because you're out of other options.
Yes. Yeah. It is. Like,
but I did feel, I was like, oh, I do feel, like Dixie Carter and Delta Burke felt like very, like, authentic.
Mm-hmm.
I tipped my hat to Jean Smart and Annie Potts because I felt like they were going for it, but it still sort of felt like the whole thing felt theatery.
Oh, it's like a very theatrical show.
It felt like a theater thing. Like, there's that play in the 80s, Crimes of the Heart, which was like three Southern women like dealing with it. And this like felt like it.
Just life dealing with
it's
life.
Just, like women being like, we're just Southern women. Like it's like that Steel Magnolias.
Oh, I mean, that sounds great.
It's like that sort of like, we're Southern women dealing with it, you know?
Like, that's just I love
so
it.
It's about. The thing that I also
that's my favorite.
Very Southern was having a lower status African-American character who's essentially getting saved by these women.
Yeah.
Then lets them feel really good about themselves.
He's an ex-convict.
That is problematic.
I felt, even in the IMDb write-up, they're like, and a well-spoken ex-convict.
Oh my God.
It was in the, like, it was literally in the Google results.
Oh my God.
It's like he's going to junior college and he's going to make something of himself. Which first of all is like,
I feel like it was
go into that, but it was just very that was Southern to me too, because one of my favorite uncomfortable things
Catherine, just pump the brakes a little bit.
I'm gonna pump the brakes. We're married. You have to go.
Yeah, we're in. Hey, we're in the pandemic now.
Yeah,
rules are out.
there is a group of older Southerners who I've spent time with. I will not say who they are. I'll just say I don't know many Southerners outside of my husband's family who go out of their way to try to show me how not racist they are.
Yeah.
And in the process of doing that, show me how racist they are. And yeah. I'm very rarely at a loss for words, but I've once or twice actually just had my mouth hang open while I truly search for what to say.
Yeah.
And the show gave me those vibes. Like with that, with, I believe his name is Anthony, the character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anthony's whole character to me was that. And if this show had been made in the 60s, I'd be like, okay, but it was made well into the 90s, which is what was.
But I think the craziest thing about this is that we have just said that it's like a very liberally, like.
Yeah, I think like.
Well, I think I was thinking of like the HIV episode feels very.
Yeah, like, yeah. It's a bit. So like, it is that kind of well-intentioned 80s yeah. liberalism where they're like, right. we are being liberal by. I think to them it was like, we're going to be progressive by having an ex-con and showing that like ex-cons right. are like
people
with agency that right. like have goals. Like right. it's like that the bar is so low, or it's just like, right. we have to, they're still human.
Right. We won't have any, we won't have anyone who's black on staff though. Like,
no.
that's or the thing anywhere that, else in the entire episode.
Yeah, that's yeah. true.
Even though it is
in Atlanta. In the city of Atlanta.
Yeah. yeah. Well, so we could just talk about Anthony's.
It felt very Southern to me is what I'm saying. It felt very yeah. Southern.
Yes. We can talk about all of Anthony's plot just at once because it yeah. literally is. He comes in. He goes to the junior college, which what did y'all think the name of the junior college was?
Oh,
because I had to put on closed captioning to make sure I did not hear what I thought I heard.
Oh, what did no. you hear?
I thought I heard the Kenneth Starr Junior
College. Oh, no,
college.
It's Kennesaw State, which
and
is
it's
actually
Kennesaw.
It's Kennesaw State, which is actually a college in
okay.
in Atlanta.
I wish it had been foreshadowing.
I don't think
because I was like Kenneth Starr. I was like, I rewound, I put on sub. I was like, why was what the hell reference is that in 1989?
That would be fantastic. No, Kennesaw State is actually a college. I don't know if it's a junior college, but I did when I heard that. I was like, okay. They dropped to Kennesaw State, which is like,
yeah.
that is doing some research.
Before the age of Google, so you know.
Yeah, I mean, gave them props for that.
Linda Bloodworth Thomas and the creator, and who she wrote most every episode, she might have been from there. I should know that.
I think she was from, so I think the little, I did a little Google afterward because I wanted to know if the house was in Atlanta, but
oh, yeah.
it's from Arkansas. And I think she might be from Arkansas because she was big with the Clintons.
Oh,
big with the Clintons. That sounds like a Breitbart.
Well, they
like, what yeah. does that mean? Yeah.
Trace the money, see where it goes. No, but she.
Yeah, what does in with the Clintons?
No,
mean?
But she was like very
friends,
like,
you know,
really yeah. close friends with the Clintons, and
yeah.
and so the exterior to the house, Brett, you probably have this already, but the exterior to the house is a house in Arkansas, and then. Dixie
Rock.
Carter's Julius Sugar Baker's house, which we didn't see in this episode,
no.
is like the governor's mansion.
Oh God,
Arkansas governor's mansion.
So his whole thing is he's yeah. on the phone with the junior college social committee, who are basically their whole thing is, hey, a lot of you know older students go to this junior college and they don't want to go do like the parties and like sock hops or whatever, you know.
Sure.
And so they're like, Anthony, if you go, you'll like lead everyone. They'll start going. And he's like, right. no. And then Suzanne's like, well, homecoming's great. I don't know why you wouldn't go to homecoming. And then he's like, yeah, cool. I will run for homecoming like queen, but it's really like homecoming attendant. And then he gets it. Like, it's literally, I think like the second beat of it is it's not homecoming queen anymore because that's a dated term.
Right.
It's homecoming like person.
Sure.
And Suzanne is just like, oh my God. Like she's so like the besmirching yeah. of the homecoming title.
I felt like I missed. Okay. So first of all, I'll hold off actually.
Now, and then the end of it is he comes home and he's holding a box and he takes like they all leave and he like takes the crown out of the box. Oh, he won. And then yeah. Suzanne's like so proud of him. And he's like, you tell me that I got out of jail, rebuilt my life, went to college, et cetera, and this is what impresses you, I'll take it. Like,
yeah,
that's
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Like, it's nothing.
It felt like there should have, I think, I totally believe that there's a 2 to 3 minute scene that's missing where
yeah.
she comes to terms. There just feels like there's no, like, I'm going to do this. It feels like, yeah, it's just a mention of like, hey, audience, homecoming queens can be guys.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. And you're like,
yeah.
well, they can. And everyone's like, well, you know, like issue resolved.
It felt so out of nowhere and also so completely divorced from anything else happening in the episode.
Yeah.
That I very quickly, and Brett, I do apologize. It's a little bit later at night. I can't remember whether or not it had a cocktail, but I quickly decided that I just didn't give a shit about this part of the episode.
No.
This is arbitrary and I don't give a shit.
No.
And then kind of accidentally just went into a fugue state. And then I snapped to when we heard her views on being a homecoming queen, but I kind of interpreted them as like she'd sucked a lot of dick and wanted to get out or something. Like, really problematic.
Wait, what were her views on her being a homecoming queen? I can't even remember.
I don't know.
And then I kind of came back to again when he had the crown, and it was just a wait what moment, and because it was
there's nothing to care about. It's very
You know, I think,
but everything she said also had a weird subtext. Although I don't know if that was just
she is the bed hopper of the cast,
right?
Right.
And she also is like the kind of conservative voice.
Now,
like
that's
the traditional
juxtaposition too. She's the bed hopper, but also the conservative.
I don't.
Voice.
She's like the more traditional, like, you know, I'm going to get married and have you know, like, that's women like, should be beautiful.
I mean, it's Blanche, right? No, wait.
I mean, it's the Blanche kind of archetype, but like, you know, younger.
I keep comparing it to the other in my head, two Golden Girls, two Cheers, like the touchstone, two of the better sitcoms from that era. And it's like, it's just weird to not see a B plot be a joke delivery system.
No. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where you're just like, you just make a few jokes and you get out this.
Yeah. No.
Like, and the whole episode, I felt like, I thought it was really fun and I enjoyed watching it, but I didn't feel like the jokes were very hard. Like,
no,
a lot of times I felt like maybe it's the Hulu version. Can you tell us if the DVD is different? But it felt like the laughs would sometimes cover the punchline.
Oh, maybe the mixing might be weird.
It felt like a theater. Like I said, it felt like theater.
It is so like in, you know, Golden Girls and Designing Women are always going to be paired against each other because they're shows starring four women. And if two things star women at the same time, they have to be opposed.
Sure.
But also because like Golden Girls would also make fun of Designing Women relentlessly. Like there are at least three or four jokes throughout where they were like Sophia at one point survives a heart attack. She's like, hey, I survived two seasons of Designing Women. Like, they really did feel like Designing Women was just a ripoff of Golden Girls, which it is not.
It's
like
not,
it really, like the only thing they have in common is they star four women, and that is basically it, because they are more varied in ages. It's a different location.
It's a workplace.
It's a different, it's a completely different vibe.
Yeah.
But also it is very play-y, and like Golden Girls is like the hardest joke writing you can see on television almost. Like it is just like boom, joke, punchline, joke. And Designing Women is very much like, here's my character monologue and my point of view, and you're going to do this, and you're acting 101 in college someday. Like, it's it's a lot of that.
Look at their leads, right? Like, Bea Arthur can, like, deliver a joke.
Yeah,
like, Lizzie Carter is an actress, you know? Yeah. Like, I see of her of, like, I'm going to give a look. And, like, there are a few times where she's like, the look will be the joke. And you're like, yeah, you know, like, yeah, but I'm also missing the joke.
Yeah, give me a joke. So the A plot of the episode is, how does it begin? Charlene comes in with I wrote down she's wearing like a Star Trek look.
Yes.
It's like this black silk, like huge muumuu with like.
I thought it was a college graduation gown.
Yes. And it has like pink, like triangles on the front.
Briefly was like, so I was just disoriented for the first 10 seconds. It's like, she's coming from college graduation. It's everything except her cap. That was my second favorite look of the show.
Was the first one Suzanne's green?
No.
Her green look?
No.
Because that was also.
Favorite was the yellow dress that was worn when they, and I don't want to spoil any plot point.
No, go for it.
That was worn when they went to go, you know, remove.
Extract.
I'm really bad with names in real life. So
Charlene.
So when they went to go remove Charlene from the cult and the sexy bed hopper.
Yeah, Suzanne.
Suzanne.
This yellow.
Let me take notes.
With the bow.
Yeah,
the bow that was outlined in black.
No, it was insane because it made her look. If you had just showed me only that screen grab of the bow and dress, I would have assumed it was an actual cartoon.
Like, yeah.
That was illustrated.
Like comic,
it was
like inked.
Yeah, it was really weird.
Her as like a talking bear every time she was in it. It was so... Anyways, I loved it. That's what I'm saying. Loved it. 10 out of 10.
There are some 80s loops.
Oh, it's the most 80s.
Everything was an 80s look.
Hair.
I mean, every dress was either an insane...
The shoulder pads are...
Fozzie Bear in a dress look.
Big bows.
Or it was like a giant box. It was simultaneously a box, but also shapeless.
Yeah.
It was a really special element of the late 80s.
So she comes in because... Has she already become a Lady June Bell recruit at this point?
So.
She's going to do it. She's going to start selling. And she's made Lily. Is that what? Yeah.
No, I think her friend is.
Oh, her friend is Libby. Her friend Libby got her into it because she is basically a pod person is her whole gig.
Is Libby a reoccurring character?
No, I looked her up because the actress looked familiar. And I think it's because she was in a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie from the mid 90s that I've definitely seen. I can't remember which one.
Suburban Commando?
No, that's Hulk Hogan.
Oh,
right.
Wow,
there's another, but there's a something Commando that was Jean-Claude Van Damme was in.
She was in one of them, and I've seen a lot of them. I was like, I could look
that
it up, and I'm like, you know what, it doesn't matter.
That was the first R movie I ever saw.
Oh, mine was Eddie Murphy's Metro. So basically, she is selling, you know, house cleaning products,
it's
rug shampoo.
It is, what's it called? It's Amway.
Yes.
It's part of Amway. Yeah.
And there's a scene early on where she is selling to Mary Jo, Annie Potts. And she's like, yeah, it'll be $13. And like $13. Like, yeah, they don't want you to say dollars in the manual because I guess it makes it sound like money. So it's just like, you know, $13.5, $3.5.
Yeah. May I have 2 minutes?
You need two.
I'm time capping it so that listeners can just fast forward or put it on speed dial. I read an amazing essay that the essay book won one of the best books of the year a few years ago, and the essayist is from Florida originally. Now lives in New York, and her parents were members of Amway.
Yes,
and she wrote an essay called "Going Diamond." And
it's
if
great.
You are a listener,
oh, and Diamond is. Diamond is a part of this. They mentioned Diamond is one of the levels.
Diamond is the highest level you can achieve in Amway. Yeah. And she writes this amazing essay about Amway. Now, some listeners may know that Bessie DeVos's family money, her husband's money, comes from Amway.
Yep.
And Amway is very aligned with conservative Republicanism.
Oh, yeah.
They give a lot of money to it. And she writes in this essay about essentially the brainwashing that happens and how it very much aligns with the individualistic, pull yourself up by your own bootstraps, personal responsibility ethos of conservative America. And Winston's cousins, who are like a Republican trifecta, they're evangelical, military, Republican.
Yep.
His cousin's the one who's gone all in on Rodan and Fields. She is an endless meme machine.
Yep.
And all of her memes that I'd seen were identical to the same slogans that Amway traded in, which were identical to the ones in the show.
Yeah.
So all of this is to say that, first of all, if you love this stuff, you should totally go read this essay, Going Diamond. But second of all, they were right on all of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's so accurate. And I had to block Jessica from sending me Facebook messages.
You shouldn't have said the name.
It's fine. She's not gonna.
Have you all listened to the podcast The Dream? Because it is all about it's basically Serial, but about this one woman who's a lot of her she's from either the Midwest or the South, but a rural part of the country. And she's all my relatives are doing all this stuff. So I'm going to investigate. And she gets in and she joins one, then try and figure out all this stuff.
Yeah.
And season one is all about multi-level marketing. And season two is all about wellness and crystals, which is also another part of all this.
Yeah.
And so after listening to that podcast, being from the South, of course, I know my Facebook feed
Avon is,
littered with people that are just doing all this stuff.
Yeah.
And it makes me so angry because it is preying on women who have been told by society that don't go get a job, be in the home.
Yeah.
It's basically the conservative culture, hey, let's get into it, tells women to like stay at home, raise the kids, you know, don't, you know, submit yourself to God, et cetera. But then they're bored and also like want spending money, et cetera. And so then here comes the same like conservative money machine of like, well, why don't you just come sell some products to all your friends?
And how amazing to get to be a business owner and build your business while still being right where God wants you, which is
at
your children. And that's one of the biggest blessings of this business.
And it just, and like what drives me crazy about it is like the logic of, so you're having to buy all the products up front, and well, then you were
amazing.
You were only selling to your friends. So your audience, your like seller base or whatever is shrunk. And then the whole point is to recruit them to do the same thing. And so therefore,
make money off of multiple streams, right?
You make
most of your money due to the pyramid that you build below you, although it's not a pyramid scheme. It's all totally legal. The reason that the people who own Rodan and Fields, for instance, are now multi-millionaires or billionaires is that this is pretty much, from a business perspective, the best possible way to go and distribute a consumer packaged good, right? You no longer have to worry about complex shipping networks. You
don't
have to worry about sitting on your stock. Instead, everyone who risks being out of money, if this stuff doesn't sell, it's not you. It's not going to be sitting in a warehouse that you have to worry about.
And sit in their garage
of someone who's out $2,000.
And they've already made the money because like the person bought it from them.
It's like only about 1.5% of people actually make money off of these. So Winston's cousin, to her credit, does appear to be making money. She's been doing it for several years. And she is
she lives in the governor's mansion.
She's part of the 1% of Rodan and Fields. Very much not. And
the other 1%.
So, but she's allowing the business owners of Rodan and Fields. But it's all of this. It's just.
But it's like if you took a part-time job, it would be making the same amount of money for less time. Like, you'd be able to work at work.
It's weird because, like, Charlene doesn't really want to do it. She's kind of bullied into it. And then, like, everyone's worried. The next time we see her in a scene, she's hastily, like, trying to get done with her day job work because she's got to meet Libby at the market for one of their schemes, which is to sit and talk loudly about how great the product is to each other so people overhear. And then she then like says, and then we have to like, you know, sell it to them. And I always feel kind of bad about that trapped look in their eye and stuff. And it's like, oh my
God. No, it's the best part because it was so accurate.
Yeah.
Winston's sister has been tempted off and on to buy these products, partially because I think that the too good to be true before and afters get tempting and she's curious. But second, Winston's sister is a better person than me in some ways, in many ways. And she, I think, is driven by that desire to be nice, to help Jessica. Yeah. And so they actually tell you to have your story and your why, because that helps people, and they describe this in the essay, it helps to convince people to buy from you, your friends, because you have your why and your bigger vision. But then on top of that, you are supposed to ask every single person and you don't take no for an answer.
Oh, and they say that in this episode.
You have to hear no at least 3 times. And if anyone who listens to this has worked something like an entry-level sales job at a place like Yelp, where you're just selling to small businesses, they like this is a classic thing that they train you in those basic like yellow page type sales jobs.
Yeah,
you have to hear no 3 times before you give up. And so Jessica, when she sent me these messages on Facebook, I said no. Then she asked why, and I said I have really sensitive skin. Then she said to tell me exactly what I was allergic to, and she would go look up if these things were in any of the
products. So much work.
And she could also, and also to keep in mind that there's a limitless return policy, basically, which when you Google it, you find out is not really true.
That's a lot of it.
And then I'll say it, I'm crazy. But but she has clearly been trained, right? And to be relentless, and there has to be the shamelessness in it. And I loved that part of the episode because it's so accurate that most people, just to get you off your, like, the instinct of most people when they're in an uncomfortable situation is just to do what they can do to get the discomfort to go away.
Yeah.
Which with a mid-level just,
okay, market, here's 13. I'll give you.
Yeah. Like, throw $50 at the problem and end
but it.
It
feels like they, I do think that they tried the whole episode with this storyline. It just felt so condensed. Like they never really got to like
take out the homecoming stuff and get. So like we meet Libby. Libby comes to pick up Charlene. And she, like, Charlene tries to say, like, I don't really want to do this. Like, I also like that Libby tried to hug Mary Jo and she was just like, no, I'm allergic to rug shampoo. And like, right, she didn't right. want any part of it. And no, I'm like, thanks. Yes, I like you, Mary Jo.
Yeah.
And then like, no, like Libby grabs Charlene, pulls her out, and Julia says, well, our friend's been taken by a perky cult.
Yeah.
And that, and so
the Junies.
Yes, she is now a member of the Junies. And so the next scene is when, like, it, the way the show works around not going outside of the house is very interesting. Because, yeah. So we hear about Charlene's quest to get out of the Junies from Mary Jo, who was also there. And Mary Jo comes back to the house
right.
to tell everyone else, so I just saw Charlene do this.
Right, right.
And she says that Libby is so persuasive and so like tenacious that she shouldn't be selling Junies products. She should be arguing with the PLO. Which, did y'all look that up?
No.
The Palestinian Liberation Organization.
Topical.
Oh, I know. Like, whoa.
Can I be honest? What it made me think of was the White Citizens Councils. Because
Catherine.
Yeah, I know. I like so I brought a lot of
Catherine had so much baggage. There was like so much baggage. It was like,
that was part of why I didn't look it up. I was like, just in case it's some crazy like white nationalist thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, design women would definitely get up in there.
Yeah.
And so like, Charlene is at the convention. The Junies right. convention is in town. 500 of these perky ladies are all
perfect detail. I love because they yeah. all get you to pay for these events.
Yeah.
It was so pitch perfect.
And then Suzanne, like, they're all like moving out to go get their friend back. She's like, well, right. Suzanne's like, well, my plot line's on break, so I'm going to come with you. She says, like, y'all need to fight sugar with sugar. And it's like, that's great.
Yeah, that was great. I felt like that felt very accurate.
Yeah.
Southern.
And
well.
Southern of like, the only, like, when she grabbed, Libby and started complimenting her. I was like, yep, this feels
yeah. very when they get there and like, so the way they distract Libby is when they get to the convention, Suzanne just like sees her walking with Charlene. Suzanne just basically like almost hug tackles her.
Yeah.
And just like starts talking to her like she knows her. And it's like, hey there, darling. Just yeah. walking away. It's like really great.
Yeah, that was great.
I also pointed out Mary Jo's weird like sweater dress that she was wearing at this point. Like this, it was like a gray long sleeve cotton with like a red piping. It looked kind of like what Wesley Crusher wears sometimes on Star Trek.
Describing a dress that my mom owned. It's essentially a gray sweatshirt with lots of red piping.
Yeah, it's basically, yeah. yeah. I mean, it's very same. So then they like try to deprogram her.
Yeah.
Oh, we do also meet the male Junie.
Oh,
yeah.
There's a lot to unpack in that.
Yeah, a male Junie comes up, and he's just there to pick up women, right?
Right, but he had been a lawyer for the ACLU. It was just very like...
It sounds like he's very successfully selling products by hitting on women.
Yeah, no. He's like, come up to my hotel room. And don't they then tell him, like, hey, we told you to stop doing that.
Yeah, you can't do that anymore.
Yeah, like, you need to stop.
Yikes.
He's the Harvey Weinstein of...
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was cool. It was a lot. I mean, I felt sort of like whiplash because it was like, I'm an ACLU owner, lawyer who sued for gender discrimination, and now I'm in it, and I'm also sexually harassing. Yeah. I was like, yeah. What is happening?
No, that's not true. That would be like an ACLU. To me, that's like the person who was like the lawyer for the NAACP, then becoming
Like
it a just member felt, of the Klan. It's like, what?
It just felt
this
very
is how this works.
Well, it does feel like I did feel like that kind of leads me to a general note for the whole show. It felt like it was a little like too much issue wise. Like
there's a lot.
Like, it felt like with the PLO and the ACLU and all this kind of
too
stuff.
Too many
like,
acronyms.
It's like a 22-minute like, episode, and we're, like, getting...
The best part
there's when... There's so much stuff going on. It's yeah. like, I'm... Gender discrimination, also sexual harassment. It was, like, a two-minute scene.
Well, the best part is this wasn't even one of their issue episodes.
I know.
Yeah, this was the fun, light one.
Yeah.
So then we get Mary Jo and... Julia, take Charlene to, like, I guess to a private area, like a little table off to the side to try to, like,
I think it was a place that was just for people of a certain status within the organization.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then they just broke in into it.
Daisy Orchard, Orchid Rose. And so, like, they say, like, it's like you're in the Stepford Wives, and Charlene's like, oh, I love that movie.
Yeah,
like,
that was a good joke.
And then they start deprogramming her, and they're like, who is this Lady June? Like, why are you caring so much? And then June walks in,
right.
Ms. June, and then the episode takes a bizarre turn. a truly, so like, Charlene, oh my God, Charlene basically sees her and she fangirls, like, she knows the legend, she knows, like, you built this company up because, like, you were working from home and you needed money, and so you sold, like, bathroom cleaner and mason jars and blah, blah, blah. And then it turns out that, like, according to the point of view of the show, Lady June is a good person.
She did all of this to empower women.
To empower women. That and it's founded on Christian principles. She literally says Christian principles. And she's, like, trying to show men that, like, women can run their own businesses, et cetera. And she just, like, hard sells multi-level marketing as women's empowerment after a whole episode of them being like, you're in a cult, the true thing of like, you're in a cult, they've like sucked you in, they're taking your money, they're monopolizing your friendships, and then the show, it turns and it doesn't turn back.
No.
In fact,
then
so
she's
weird.
Basically, but then what was the twist again where she, why did she then say, so you're not a Junie because you don't need this? Isn't that what she said?
Yeah, it was a weird, like
you already have a job, so you don't need the Junies. It was something very weird.
Yeah, like Charlene, like she, after this big speech, like she was like, well, then I want to be back in, let me in. And then she's like, no.
Yeah, no, you don't. Yeah. You're not a Junie.
And I didn't really understand why. And then Julia was like, well, you know, this sounds pretty good. And then Mary Jo's like, no, come on, we're getting out. And so what is this episode saying about pyramid schemes?
Does that a studio note? Do you feel like they got some crazy ass studio note that was like,
hey guys, Amway's a sponsor for, you know, 60 minutes. You can't
come down on it. Cause it felt like such a hard turn and such a cutting off the whole bite. Like, it just took all the bite out of the episode. Like,
Julia Sugarbaker is the character that reads everything to filth, sees through all the lies. Right. Like, she is the one that gives the, like, impassioned, like, do not sexually harass me, like that.
Right.
And so to have her be the one to be like, well, actually, could I join? It's like, oh my God, what Twilight Zone am I in?
So weird. I feel like, have you watched Shrill?
Yes.
So yeah. I feel like that episode of Shrill, I feel like, did it right because it was like it showed that for a lot of people this does not work and this should not be happening and that there is an exploitive element to it, but she felt they did manage to gray it out enough that it's like, but for some women this actually does mean a lot.
Yeah.
I feel like it would have been more powerful to have had them talk to rank and file women
like Libby. Like, why is Libby? We should have found out the reason that, like, why is Libby doing this?
Right, because
like,
I was like, on a, like, and if you're gonna try to give it a both sides, I feel like that's the way to do it. Other than, but like, talking to the head of the company feels like a weird way to do it.
And having her being like an unimpeachable voice of reason, I think if you take the speech she gave and put it in Libby's mouth, it actually works more because I buy it more from a rank and file person being like, this is giving me purpose than the person that is benefiting from all the fucking, like, millionaire that's profiting off of all these people. So like, funny. I don't need to hear her sob story. Like,
did you also think that I also was expecting it to be a bigger actress? Because when they were like, oh, Lady Jane sucks, I was like, I'm sure Lady Jane, if they're talking so bad about her, she's probably going to come in. And she came in and I was like, I don't recognize this actress.
No, I didn't either. Oh, yeah.
I kind of wish it had been her dress. She
was in a
pink silk muumuu.
She was in a bedazzled sack.
Yeah.
And it was mesmerizing and beautiful.
That was totally weird.
Totally wanted to sign up for Lady June.
The whole episode, though, was a little bit of a lurch from one thing to the next.
I yeah, wonder- it, It doesn't zip. It doesn't zip along, really.
I just feel like there's that kind of thing, and maybe this is 80s TV in general, like where when they try to do an issue, it always, and maybe it's also just the fact that this it's 30 years later that we're just like, wow, even the liberal stance at that time was like pretty middle of the road.
Yeah, it was like multi-level marketing's fine.
Yeah.
Do you guys ever like playing the game? Like, what are we saying right now that's going to be? I mean, obviously, I've said a lot that's problematic.
All right, this is what I think about every time I record.
Yeah. Sort of like, what element of my liberalism, like, are people going to look back at white millennial Gen Z woke culture?
Yeah.
Just cringe because it's so uncomfortable that, I mean,
but anyhow. I also think of like so the Clintons. The creator of the show being in with the Clintons, and it's like, oh right,
stop with the far right talking.
Just follow the cash. It's out there. Multi-level marketing is good, and follow the cash. No, I do feel like it's no, but that thing of like, you know, it's like right. There was a lot less difference between these points of view, and even like the other big hurdle is like. Homecoming King can exist too, and you're like, yeah. Right? Hasn't it already existed like before the 80s?
What sucks is that ostensibly I like Lady June, aside from the Christian principles thing. I like Lady June's speech of like,
sure,
you know, women can be business owners, etc. And the thing is the show is already proving that because this is a woman-owned design firm that has an all-women staff, and then Anthony like delivers things or like does orders.
Yeah.
So like this episode is trying to prove the thing that literally every episode of the show already proves. And it would have been really great to have had Julia do like I was in the exact same place you were, and I started my own business by like employing people and paying them for their work and not making them buy from like It would have been really cool to have an actual female entrepreneur that is on the fucking show as the lead of the show.
Yeah, that's the thing. They have a successful example, a counterpoint to this, like literally who is the star of the show. It is truly, truly crazy.
It's been a while. It's not been since like the Blossom gun control episode that I've had my mind so thoroughly blown by, by a turn. That episode is taken.
I do feel like they could have. The other thing that was sort of disappointing is, again, I keep thinking back to Cheers because that's like the 80s show I watched. I mean, you and I both have like that distinct love. It reminds me a little bit of when Sam, where Carla goes to work at like the TGI Fridays.
Yeah.
And Norm and Cliff go to get her and then end up staying because they love it so much.
Yeah.
And then Sam's just like, comes over and he's like, I can't really, this sucks, but I can't really compete with it. But we all know it sort of sucks. And then they managed to kind of like undercut it where it's like, this is maybe quote unquote better, but like, you know what I mean? They managed to use a humorous situation to like, I mean, it would have been something like Charlene's on the hook for $500 of supplies. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
Counterpoint. It's possible that the writers themselves felt conflicted about this.
Oh, yeah.
Also, I think that this is honestly the greatest tradition, which is getting women to turn on themselves through some strange mind jiu-jitsu where you convince women that, you know, they actually are unlikable and difficult or that they actually do have a great business opportunity that wouldn't obviously be available to them otherwise. So I don't know. It's kind of, to me, it's interesting because you wonder if there's a part of them that are like, well, it's better than nothing, which is what you sell people.
Yeah.
Right? That's what you sell. That's what you sell lower income, primarily minority.
Oh, well, like
who are currently working in grocery stores, right?
Yeah.
You're so lucky to have this job. And that's the other thing is when I was with that plot twist, you're like, I don't know. Maybe they kind of are like, well, it's not all bad. If you got nothing else, do this.
Yeah. I also, also the dream they go into how like churches, the role that churches play in fostering this shit of like, like building like a community center. Like there's one in the wellness season. Like there's a wellness center that is connected to the church, and for some reason the church has all their Sunday school and like after things at the wellness center where you were constantly bombarded with like, buy our water, buy our this, buy our that. And it's just like that is not what Jesus wanted. No. If you are into that kind of thing, he was not there to sell you water.
Yeah, kind of the opposite.
Opposite. Oh my God. Like,
I mean, when I say that I judge the Southern religiosity, it has nothing to do with judging religion itself. It has everything to do with tying religion to anything that is overtly political.
Or capitalist.
Or capitalist.
And also just like,
parody gospel.
This is a larger conversation, but the thing that I love most about Schitt's Creek is that it depicts small town life, but is void of religion, and not in a obvious way or a bad way, but coming from like all my family lives in small towns and all of their social circle is all controlled by you know, the sport teams they play on, the activities, the friend groups, the vacations. It's all controlled by one thing, the one church. And you know, if you got a good one that's like good, then like, hey, you lucked out. But like, if your one avenue for all your social shit is rotten, as my parents was 10 years ago, it destroys your life. Like and so like seeing Schitt's Creek, where it's like they have a thriving like local businesses, they have thriving local arts, they have like a singing group that has nothing to do with church.
Yeah.
And like that independent artistic freedom that exists independently of like also like religion is cool.
And Schitt's Creek deep. And Critch, you're absolutely right. And that is one of the charms of Schitt's Creek. It is like kind of an idealized community in that way. And the other thing is they did this episode.
Oh, is that, which one did they do it in? Is it the most recent season?
No, they did it in...
I haven't seen the newest
early
one.
It's early on. And
Moira.
And Moira and David had to... Moira got involved with it. And the joke, they did a great joke, which is like such a truism with this sort of pyramid scheme, is they did the whole presentation, they did the whole thing, and then every woman's like, yeah, we've all sold it to each other.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you know, I was like, oh, that's the smartest, funniest way to comment on it. And they were just like, yeah, we did this last year where we all did it. We all sold it to one another, and then we stopped doing it. Yeah.
There's an unseen episode that happened.
And I was like, oh, that's a very smart, because I was watching that literally did like make me, that was such a funny rug pull for me to be like, it calls out that without hurt. It's just a truism.
Yeah.
Without taking a stance. It's more like, this is literally what happens to people who do this. They run out of people and then you just sort of forget about it. And it was
You just like, sort of you eat that shit.
Did your mom do that?
My mom did security systems where it was a device that you would put in your, purse.
Well, your mom is also a securities expert, correct?
Yeah, exactly. She was black ops for several years in the Marine Corps.
That is, if you'd met Winston's mother.
You know my mother. You've never met her, but if you would meet her, you'd be like, I know you.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was like a thing that you put in your purse, and if your purse got snatched, it would pull a pin, and it would start beeping. Like, and you couldn't make it stop beeping until it was like a sound grenade, basically.
Yeah.
And then she had security systems, and the only one she sold was to my grandmother.
Oh, God.
Like, I can't keep doing
this. We have a Cutco knife, right? I can see it right now. We have a Cutco knife.
My cousin did Cutco.
Yeah.
I will readily support Cutco. For any listeners, I have a discount code. You can.
Oh no!
It's genuinely.
This is the twist to this episode.
Yeah, oh no!
This becomes when we sell you on Cutco. Right? Yeah.
No, it's Cutco's great. The good one.
No, these all are bad, but Cutco, you should get involved. We have a great plan for you.
Well, we all did UCB. We know pyramids.
Cutco.com. Yeah. No, our neighbor, it's a sad story that I won't go through in full, but our neighbor's son found himself selling Cutco knives, and my mother bought one from him to essentially just be kind, because again, it's easier to just spend the money to get out of the uncomfortable situation.
To get just like them to stop talking to you.
She bought it, but it's honestly not been bad. Now, is it any better than a Wusthof knife? No. Did it cost the same amount of money or potentially more? Yes. But it's honestly fine.
Yeah. But no, that was such a strange, because I felt, and then when I had to go look back, Brett, because I went through the episodes and then we started seeing the episodes and I was like, oh yeah, this is like a very progressive show
yeah.
for the time. And that made the ending of it even more confusing to me.
It had to have been like a note or something.
I feel like it feels like a studio exec was like, we can't do this.
I'm going to watch more Designing Women.
Yes.
It opened my eyes. It opened my eyes, made me realize pyramid schemes are not all bad. I enjoyed it.
Wait, well, is there another?
I will be watching more.
Yeah, yeah. Is there another? Do we need to tell you whether or not we?
Oh no! Were you ready for some must-have facts?
Oh yeah, sure.
Yeah, hey. So,
hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The ratings for this episode, I have no idea because the website that I use starts in December 1989. This is February, so I don't know. I don't know how many people watch it. And also, this not in the top 30 for the season. So, like, Designing Women peaked in seasons 4 and 5. Maybe 4, 5, 6. Like, it was in the top 30 then. But it wasn't in the top 30. And the top 5 shows of this TV season, the 88-89 TV season, were number 5, Cheers, 4, 60 Minutes, 3, Roseanne, 2, A Different World, and 1, The Cosby Show.
Wow.
So,
and A Different World was a spinoff of The Cosby Show.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. So it's totally wild. And I guess this might have been the season where Lisa Bonet was actually the lead for like the one. It was her spinoff. And then she got pregnant and Bill Cosby was like, well, Denise Huxtable can't be pregnant out of wedlock. You're fired from your own show.
Wow.
And so then like,
well, that guy maybe
not the worst thing Cosby's done. Though.
No, but like still also bad.
It's still of bad. The same sort of oeuvre.
Yeah, bad. Now, when she did, and so they said that Denise was like going on a studying abroad, and then when she came back, I think she was allowed to rejoin The Cosby Show as Denise for like a season or something.
Wow.
I've never watched The Cosby Show, and I'm not doing it on this show unless I find a super fan that is also woke to the truth.
Yeah, there you go.
Because I'm not going to argue. I've already said this on the podcast. I'm not arguing with a Cosby denier.
No. We don't have time for that.
No, I don't have time for none of us. On CBS, the CBS Monday night lineup at this time was pretty great. It was Newhart started off, and then Kate and Allie, Murphy Brown, Designing Women, and then a drama called Almost Grown that did not last a season. That's a lady heavy night.
That is a lady heavy
night. It's Bob Newhart and the ladies. I love that.
Yeah, I love it. That's so that is really that now that lineup needs its own channel. Because women can't, we can't have that in a mainstream. It has to be on its sequestered into a woman's channel.
I'm going to be the buzzkill and just say that for me hearing that, it made my heart feel heavy because it was a reminder of just how small and how short gains for women really are.
That's like when you...
Ending it on a high note.
No, but like, when you look back, television is such a good barometer of like where we are in terms of everything and like... It's a little bit different now because there's so many streaming services, but that's also kind of indicative of how like niche and polarized everything is like no one's watching the same stuff. But if you look at like, if you compare the sitcoms of the early 90s to the ones of the early 2000s, and it's just like all of the people of color and women just disappeared.
Wow.
From 91 to 2001. Like it's very, is very interesting.
You know, Brett, something I feel a lot of people forget is that during that decade we solved racism.
Oh right, yeah.
We fixed them.
Yeah.
And so we could just go back to normal.
Yeah.
Go back to normal.
So we should just go back to the way it's supposed to be now.
Yeah.
Little tap ahead for all the women.
So on IMDb, 49 users rated this episode an 8.4. What? Out of 10, would y'all go higher or lower? Or
I would go lower, a little lower. What? I would go a little lower. I could see the appeal of the show in this episode, but I thought it was a little. It felt weird. Yeah, like I guess
it did
something
feel.
Like it just Cheers. I guess
Winston
it's hard to compare because it's one of
polite. Are we talking about all television? Because
I guess even for just like designing women, which y'all have only seen this one episode, but I still feel like for designing women, this is like a 7. And I picked this one because I went through all of season 3, and this is the highest rated. Like this is like one of the two highest rated episodes of the season.
Yeah,
and I'm like,
I looked through the Hulu has the essential episodes.
Yeah.
And
this is not.
This was not one of them.
This is not an essential.
There was only like one in season 3, so it seems like season 3 might not have been.
Oh, maybe it's a dead zone.
4 and 5, maybe they were hitting their stride.
Yeah, it's very weird. Who had the must see performance of this episode?
I mean, probably the male Junie for me.
I thought Jean Smart.
He did some work.
Jean Smart was good.
Yeah.
I liked her.
You can't go wrong.
Charlene.
You can't go wrong with Jean Smart.
I liked the,
Who?
The DeFazzie Bear.
Oh,
Delta Burke.
I like Delta Burke.
Yeah, she was good.
She's very good.
Wait, did y'all watch Watchmen?
No, we haven't watched it
yet. Oh, you gotta watch. See Jean Smart.
Yeah,
playing God, she's so good.
No, I haven't seen
Watchmen. Sorry. I thought you would have.
No.
So good.
No, we didn't see it.
And lastly, must other people see this episode?
We're currently selling for a mid-level marketing company.
I feel like don't watch it because it's just going to like dig you in deeper.
Yeah, that's true.
I'd say watch the first 20 minutes. If you have been the victim of a mid-level marketing scheme, again, probably not. It will.
Like I said, I feel that they're Brett. I'm really glad that you gave us the highest rated episode of season 3, but I have a gut feeling that there are better Designing Women episodes out there.
A ton better.
Yeah.
But if you want a couple crazy fashions to hook you in and get you to
watch. Oh, yeah.
Or if you're someone who was thinking that this was kind of a design-oriented reality show from the 90s, and what you're really looking for is a female-driven sitcom in the late 80s.
Yeah, that was...
And this is it.
I heard that they're trying to remake it.
Yeah, that was going around for a little while. They were trying to like redo it in some way, but like...
I feel like if you did it in Atlanta, the cast would need to be... I think it would be a better show if it was an African-American cast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. It'd be better. I will also say that for Designing Women is one of the shows that like starts strong. So like you can start like episode 1. I feel like season 1 is a very good season, and it pretty much like it gets into the second episode is maybe the most iconic episode of the entire series. It's the night the lights went down in Georgia speech that drag queens love quoting.
That's
episode 2. And so it starts really strong. So you don't have to skip.
Show definitely, as I was watching it, I was like, oh, you can definitely see drag queens like getting into this.
Yeah.
Like,
and it suffered for a long time because it wasn't on streaming. Like it has not been on, it just joined streaming, I think last year. And so like, that's the thing, like in order to be part of the culture, you have to be on a streaming service. You have to be on Hulu or Netflix so people can watch you.
Yeah.
Every time I've heard a reference to it, it's come from someone who's like, you know, it's like a queer person.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think right now. I think it's all like queer friends and acquaintances who've referenced it. And to all of you, I sincerely apologize for not understanding that it was not.
We all learned.
I totally get it. Like within 90 seconds of watching it, I was like, oh, everything makes sense now.
Yeah, this makes full sense. Where can people find y'all online if they want to talk about, if they want to sell you some Cutco knives?
Oh, God.
Is this for real?
Well, I'm just find you on the internet.
Honestly, if you want to send me Cutco, the best way to reach me, and I might be open to it.
Are you lying. Don't do your email address.
No, I wasn't going to do that. I was going to do something worse, honestly. Find me on LinkedIn. Send me a message. Put Cutco in the subject.
Well, that way you'll know they're serious.
I will respond.
What's your Instagram handle?
It's locked.
Never mind. I'm on Twitter. It is my name, Winston Knoll, N-O-E-L. And here I do a podcast called Mission to Zix that is a lot of fun. So check that out if you're interested.
But also
shoot me a tweet me.
Read him Cutco links. And
I will if you are someone who sends me, if you hear this, you send me a Cutco link on LinkedIn. You'll show me you're good at following directions. I'll want to reward that. I will buy a Cutco knife for you. That's my promise. Brett, if we check in 2 years and you ask me how many Cutco knives I bought as a result of this, I'll tell you the number of LinkedIn messages I got.
That'll be how many listeners I have, probably. Zero.
Come on.
And we'll see. Well, that does it for this episode of Must Have Seen TV. Thanks again to my guests, Winston, Noel, and Catherine Mon, for dropping by and talking about designing women with me. Next time, I'll be discussing the Bob episode, You Can't Win. You Can't Win is in season 1, episode 15 of Bob, and you can't watch Bob literally anywhere unless you want to buy it on DVD and watch it on DVD player. But let's just say if you follow Must Have Seen TV on Instagram, I might figure out a way to hit y'all up with something. I don't know. Follow it. So I want to hear from y'all. Follow Must Have Seen TV on Twitter and Instagram. And if you want to watch live streams of classic sitcoms, again, I'm inferring things about Instagram that I'm trying to figure out. You can also email musthaveseentv@gmail.com. If you like what you've heard, rate and review the show in Apple Podcasts. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Brett White. Read the words that I write at decider.com. Thanks to Acast for hosting the podcast. Thanks to y'all for listening. And I will see you next time on Must Have Seen TV Pandemic Edition.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.